the final case for oral argument this morning and for the term is Finag versus Pipestone Livestock Auction and Finag versus South Dakota Livestock Sales. Maybe a word of explanation on this case. It's actually quite historic. This court has been sitting since 1889 when we became a state, and only for the second time has a case been submitted to this court where it failed to reach a majority opinion. And our forefathers apparently thought about that and many years ago passed a statute that says when that happens, the court will rehear the case. And so that is the limited purpose of the hearing this morning. We invited rebriefing by the parties, and they did submit additional briefing, and we are here in compliance with 1524-4 to hear one more time this proceeding. And the last time this happened was 1917. So, and we are very grateful to the law librarian that somehow found that to kind of guide us through this proceeding. So with that introduction, for the appellant, we have Mr. Michael Schaefer and Mr. Lawrence Oldfield. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct.
Welcome to South Dakota. And we also then for the appellee have Mr. Jonathan Van Patten from Vermilion. And Mr. Schaefer, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Thank you, sir. May it please the counsel. It's my privilege, along with Mr. Oldfield, to represent Pipestone Livestock and South Dakota Livestock Sales of Watertown. I wasn't here the last time the case was argued, and I hope I can help assist the court in answering any questions you have concerning this case. We were directed at the outset to focus our argument on Finag versus Huffnagel, the Minnesota Supreme Court decision, which was issued, I believe, sometime in 2006. At the outset, I want to just point out some of the facts in this case. The Finag loaned money to the Burwells for their dairy operation beginning in June of 2002. And interestingly enough, I looked at the security agreement and the other documents studying to prepare for this argument. Finag took a security agreement from Burwell Brothers. Finag filed a UCC-1 in Burwell Partnership. Finag filed an EFS in Burwell Partnership, the individual Burwells, and Sakota Dairy, not listing Burwell Brothers. And as far as we can tell from the bankruptcy pleadings, which are part of this record, Burwell Partnership is the legal entity that exists, and the DBA is Burwell Brothers. So Mr. Van Patten's client may very well have taken a security interest in a non-existent DBA, as he has indicated with respect to other arguments in this case.
Now, when you say Burwald Brothers, are you saying Calvin Burwald and Michael Burwald?
No. Burwald Brothers, B-R-O-S, period.
There was a financing statement filed as against Calvin and Michael Burwald.
There was a financing statement. There was an EFS filed listing Burwald Partnership, Calvin and Michael Burwald, Kimberly Burwald, and Sakota Dairy. It never listed Burwald Brothers, the entity that supposedly granted the security interest. Never listed it. It's not in there. The fact of this case is Finag, in the security agreement, took the right to inspect the collateral, to require the debtor to list all of the buyers, commission merchants, to and through whom it was selling collateral, including dairy cattle. When they filed the EFS, they only listed, as I said, the Burwell Partnership and the individuals, and they only listed dairy cattle and milk in the EFS filing. It was on file as an effective financing statement under the Food Security Act. Now, in the course of about 2 years, approximately 2,000 head of cattle were sold in the name of C&M Dairy by the Burwells. in various livestock auction barns to various facilities, and there are at least two other cases pending here before the court that involved those cattle totaling over $1 million.
Now, just right as a beginning, C&M Dairy is a fiction, isn't it? It might stand for Calvin and Michael Burwald, but C&M Dairy in itself, that's just a fictitious name, isn't
C&M
it?
C&M Dairy is a DBA of Calvin and Michael, of the Burwalds.
But no fictitious name was ever filed or set forth in the record.
No fictitious name was ever filed.
So they're just a fiction. So no way could they have been the owners or the sellers of the livestock we're talking about.
That's not true. I guess in the same respect, maybe Burwald Brothers that gave the security interest couldn't have given a security interest either, since they're a non-existent DBA also. The point here is, and as the court wanted us to address, and there's a significant fact in this case that I want to point out. In October of 2002, shortly after this relationship started, a lawsuit was filed by Van Beek Scientific against Calvin Burwald, Michael Burwald individually, and Calvin and Michael Burwald, DBA, C&M Dairy, and Fine Ag, along with Dakota Bank. And in that lawsuit, it was alleged that Calvin and Michael Burwald did business at C&M Dairy. Fine Ag admitted that. They admitted that judicially in those proceedings in November of 2002. Those proceedings involved the sale of dairy cattle by C&M Dairy, 150 head, to Van Beek Scientific in connection with another transaction. So Fine Ag was on notice that the Burwalds did business as C&M Dairy very early in this relationship. In fact, they were on notice that the Burwalds did business to C&M Dairy before any of these sales that are the subject of these two lawsuits arose. And I would point out, and I think Fine Ag agrees, there are nine sales. All the Pipestone sales were in 2004. The Watertown sales, some of them were in 2002 and 2003, but Fine Ag has agreed that all the sales before March 10 of 2003 are barred by the two-year statute of limitations under the facts of this case, and I think they've conceded that in their brief. So Fine Ag was on notice before any of these sales occurred that the Burwalds did business at C&M Dairy. Now, in the Huffnagel case, this case differs from Huffnagel because Huffnagel involved fronting sales by actual third parties. This case involves sales by the Burwalds doing business as C&M Dairy. Fine Ag has alleged that all of these sales were by the Burwalds DBA C&M Dairy in the name of C&M Dairy, all of them, in all of these cases. So the distinction is, in a fronting case where there's an actual third party, there's somebody other than the seller. In this case, the Burwalds are the sellers under a fictitious name or a DBA, C&M Dairy. So that's a significant distinction. And the reason it's important...
In Huffnagel, wasn't that basically a sham, that third party?
Well, I think it was, but they were actual real people. In fact, in that case, the real people were the children, some of which were minors, and the hired hands of the Bucks. And in that case, I think the evidence disclosed in both the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court that the buyer in that case had notice and actually received the EFS indicating Fine Ag had a security interest because he paid the Bucks in Fine Ag on some of the sales.
So there's a difference between a paper sham and a breathing sham.
Well, I think the difference is more important than that, Your Honor. In the case where there's a fronting sale involving a third party, which is what that case and what the party in the Minnesota Supreme Court acknowledged, is there's a real person selling that commodity or that farm product. The secured party in that case can't know and won't necessarily know if there is a third party and can't do anything really to protect itself. In this case, where Fine Ag knew that the Burwells did business as C&M Dairy. They could have, and in fact, we submit they were obligated to list C&M Dairy on the effective financing statement for two reasons. Under the Food Security Act itself, the statute provides if there's a material change, you have to amend and refile your EFS to reflect that material change. The Food Security Act authorized the Secretary of Agriculture to promulgate regulations as to what goes in these EFS statements as minimum requirements, but said states can impose additional requirements. And South Dakota did that. South Dakota adopted a regulation that said use of a DBA is considered an additional debtor and shall be listed as such. So under South Dakota law, which is Minnesota doesn't have, but South Dakota says if there's a DBA, it shall be listed. It doesn't say may or can, it shall be listed. And the instructions from the Secretary of State also indicate that it shall be listed as an additional debtor on the EFS. Now, if that had been done in this case, we wouldn't be here. So there is a difference and a distinction in a fronting case where there's a third-party seller and in a DBA case where the seller is the debtor, like here the Burwells are the sellers of the cattle under a fictitious name or under a DBA. Now, the whole purpose of the Food Security Act was to protect buyers and commission merchants from double payment. The purpose was to essentially abrogate and preempt the food products exception under the UCC. And it, I think, needs to be interpreted in that context. Now, under the Food Security Act, under the actual language of the statute, a commission merchant, such as my clients, the Sale Barns, take free of a security interest created by the seller in the farm products. They take free of the security interest created by the Burwells in these dairy cattle. That's the general rule. The exception to the rule is the notice requirements. And the exception provides that in a central filing state like South Dakota, and there's no dispute it's a central filing, there's no dispute that the Sale Barns obtained the master list and reviewed it. In a central filing state, the exception provides that they have to receive from the Secretary of State written notice specifying both the seller and the farm products being sold by such seller as being subject to an effective financing statement. That didn't happen here. And it didn't happen because FinAg didn't include the necessary information in its EFS that would give us notice of this, both the seller and the specific farm products being sold by that such seller as being subject to an EFS. If they would have listed C&M Dairy as they should have and were required to do under the regulations, we would have had the notice. But that didn't happen here. So under the Food Security Act, the general rule gives us the provision that we take free of the security interest, and the exception, which we submit they have the burden on, if they don't comply with the notice requirements to bring us in with that exception, then they lose. Now, in the Lisco Bank case, there was a similar issue. The buyer there had actual notice of the security interest. Lisco State Bank hadn't dotted the I's and crossed the T's to, as required under the Food Security Act and state law, to make that notice proper. And what the court there said, and that was one of the first cases interpreting the Food Security Act, says, when it enacted the Food Security Act, Congress clearly intended to place the burden of loss upon the lender in the absence of compliance with the notice provision of the Act. So because the lender, Fine Ag, didn't comply with the notice provision of the Act by listing C&M Dairy, they're not entitled to that exception under this, under the set of facts in this case.
Maybe you're going to get to it, but if we accept that, then was did C&M Dairy create the security interest for purposes of the limitation in the FSA?
No, I think our position is the. I mean, I know, and I listened actually, Your Honor, to the last argument, and you asked that same question, and you said under, and you cited, and you said there are some UCC cases whereby you can interpret seller broadly to include that. But I don't think you need to go there here, because here the Burwalds are the sellers. The security interest was created by the Burwalds. The reason they lose is because under the notice requirements, they have to comply with the strict requirements of the notice requirements to be entitled to that exception. And C&M Dairy is a DBA of the Burwalds.
So you're saying this is a Burwald case, start to finish?
I don't think you don't have to make the jump and say it's a Burwald here and a C&M there. You can say it's a Burwald DBA C&M Dairy as creating the security interest and as selling it.
And for notice as well? And for the notice exception?
Yes. But they have to list C&M Dairy as an additional DBA because of South Dakota's unique requirements.
That's the rub, because even though you want to treat them consistently throughout, in order to give notice, you have to have C&M Dairy.
Exactly.
You should have had C&M Dairy.
Right, and that's our point.
To give notice.
They didn't comply with the strict requirements of the notice exception to be entitled to that. And that's consistent with what happened in the Lisco Bank case. And as the court there said, the burden of loss for failure to comply with it falls on the lender. And that's the whole purpose behind the Food Security Act, was to place that burden on the lender and not the buyer or the commission merchant.
I want to make sure I understand one thing. Your opening statement, or your opening argument, you mentioned that the EFS did not list Burwald Brothers, and they may be the legal entity that really owns the cattle, is that right?
Well, I don't know. I just noticed
okay.
that this morning.
Well, then I want to know what significance that has to the FSA issues.
Well, it may have significance to the whole conversion claim because...
Well, I don't want to know about the conversion
claim.
I want to know about the FSA issues. I understand the significance in the conversion
Well,
case.
The significance is if the security interest is granted by Burwald Brothers, and there's no EFS filing at all
okay.
for Burwald Brothers, then they fall down completely. And they completely have failed to comply with the notice requirements. Because if that's who granted the security interest, which is what they say in their security agreement, then they haven't complied with the EFS notice requirements at all. The other distinction, I think, in the Huffnagel case in this case is it's not clear to me from Huffnagel, and it looks like from reading it and reading the Court of Appeals decision, is that there was no real assertion of any common law defenses, such as authorization, consent to sale, waiver and estoppel, like there are here. It does not appear that those were even asserted or addressed by the court.
They're not relevant under the FSA, though.
No, but they're relevant to the conversion issue.
Right.
The other...
Let me ask you about that while you're on that. One of the underlying bases for Huffnagel was the Minnesota Supreme Court's observation that they didn't think there was significant enough legislative intent expressed to put the burden in that case on the secured party. What's your observation with respect to that?
Well, I look at Huffnagel as they looked at it very mechanistically. They said either... I can't remember the names, the original owners, I think it was Buck, were the farmers. Either they said there's two sets of potential sellers, Buck or Tuker, I think it was the hired hand's name. And then they just took a mechanistic approach to it.
Two minutes.
If Tucker is the seller, he didn't create the security interest, FINAG wins. If the Bucks were the sellers, they win because the buyer got received notice through the EFS.
No, I'm sorry, I wasn't clear enough. They said there wasn't enough legislative intent to treat a seller different for purposes of notice and the created by the seller limitation. They said they didn't see where Congress was clear enough to shift liability.
Well, and I think it goes down to the fact that you had two separate legal people there.
What I'm asking is there congressional intent shown that the liability should not be on the sale barns in this case?
Well, originally when I argued my other case that I was up here on, the legislative history says they were supposed to take free of any security interest, but that's not what they said in the statute. In the statute they said created by the seller. The point being is the seller, as the Burwalds DBA C&M Dairy, is the same in both the exception and the provision that we take free and clear of. The only other argument, the court raised a question about 609.1. It wanted us to brief it, and that requires FINAG to file a criminal complaint. They never did it here. Both Mr. Van Patten and Mr. Shanks represented to the court that it required cooperation with the state's attorneys, and they intended to do it, but it never happened. And I don't think the law requires a useless act. I mean, that has to mean something. And to just say to offer to us or to the Burwalds, I think, is insufficient to satisfy the requirement of the statute. And, in fact, I think the law is clear that in interpreting statutes, we assume the legislature did not intend an absurd result, which is what would happen if you left with their interpretation that they can just tell us.
Thank you, Mr. Baker. Mr. Van Patten, you have 20 minutes.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is John Van Patten, and I'm here today representing FINAG, Inc. in this court. As the Chief Justice noted, this is a case that has been, along with two companion cases that they're not before the court today, but involve the same issue. This is a case that has been briefed three times now, and today is the third time that the case will be argued. And so my sense is to start with a question of how can I help you? What do you want to know?
Let's start where he ended. Does that statute require a useless act?
No, not at all. The statute requires an offer to file a criminal complaint. It doesn't, in particular, doesn't say you have to file a criminal complaint. It says you must offer to file a criminal complaint. And so the question, there is an ambiguity here in the statute, and the question is offer to whom? And Mr. Schaefer takes the point of view that it must be the offer must be made to the prosecutors because otherwise it would be a useless act. But we believe that in fact the language there, other than the omission offer to whom, the language is careful enough that it makes sense to offer to the perpetrator, the Burwalds, and to the victim, the notice essentially that this is a serious matter, and it can go over to the criminal side. I mean, it arises out of a commercial transaction, and the primary interest is that the proceeds are paid to the proper parties. But as we all know, particularly from the farm crisis in the 80s, there were a number of farmers and ranchers that went to a prison for diversion of proceeds or along these lines. And so it has a criminal aspect to it. But the legislature, by not requiring the filing of the complaint, essentially is saying to the parties, this is your last chance to fix this. And it can be fixed. I mean, it's not It's different than other crimes. I mean, other crimes, you really can't undo it. You can't say you're sorry and the like. This is one that actually can be fixed by giving notice, saying this is a serious matter, and unless you fix it, you may find yourself in a criminal action, which in these cases may run counter to the original intention to just fix the matter, because you'll have to divert resources to all of a sudden dealing with a criminal complaint. If a criminal complaint is required to be filed, and certainly if one is in prison, the ability to repay is going to be diminished. And so I think actually that although it would have been nice had the legislature indicated to whom, it makes sense, and it certainly is not a useful act to give notice to the parties that, especially to the perpetrator, the Burwalds, that they need to fix this problem or else serious consequences could ensue. And
if
so,
if you've answered Justice Gilbertson's question, have you?
I believe so.
Okay. I think so, too.
Oh, that's 2-4.
Would you care to help us out on the matter of the facts as stated from the review of the record by your opponent, Mr. Mike Schaefer? Is that a correct statement in every respect as to the facts of the security agreement, the financing statement, and the filing in the Central Filing Division in Pierre?
Yes, I'll address that, Your Honor. These cases have been going on for some time, and Mr. Schaefer said he noticed this morning this discrepancy, and this is not a discrepancy that I have noticed, but I take it that Mr. Schaefer's representation to this court is accurate.
My understanding was that Calvin Burwald and Michael Burwald were on the security agreement. They created the security agreement, and that the filing in the central system was against Calvin and Michael Burwald.
Actually, the filing included Calvin and Michael. It also included Burwald Partnership, I believe, and Sakota Dairy, which was a new dairy that they had acquired with the proceeds of the loan. And I guess there were some other family members that were listed.
Okay, but on the security agreement itself, was it created by Calvin Burwald and Michael Burwald as Burwald brothers or as themselves?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Your Honor. I did not review the actual document, and I can't speak to that. My assumption, and the assumption, I guess, of everybody, it is what it is, but I believe it was executed by Burwald Partnership. That's all I can say.
And then you believe the filing is also against Burwald Partnership?
I cannot speak to the question of whether there's a discrepancy between the name listed on the security agreement creating the security interest and the names for the filing.
Well, let me ask you this twist on that question. Let's assume, and I think we have to assume Mr. Schaefer is right. I know if he looked, we can probably rely on it. If Burwald Brothers created the security interest, and Burwald Brothers is not on the EFS, does that change this case?
Well, it may. There is a...
It seems to me if Burwald Brothers... Well, I should let you answer.
First of all, as noted by this court in Farmers and Merchants Bank versus Talvadol, there is some give in the system in that case, a description of the collateral. And the opinion by Justice Sabers, the question there wasn't a matter of state law, a question of federal, interpreting federal law, but there was some give available there. As to whether this is a significant difference, I'd say it may be. I don't know. But in any event, it seems because they had the same tax ID number that it wasn't misleading to the sale barns in this case, because the purported seller was CNN Darris, so they wouldn't have found it in any event. Go ahead.
It might have more relevance in the conversion, action, if we get that far, than it would in the FSA issues, probably.
I think so. The question is, however, since we have summary judgment motions granted, both for and against a Fine Ag, including summary judgment motions for our dollars, I'm not sure. They give you possibilities, of course, to say we need to remand the case, but the question seems to me is up or down on these judgments, and based on the record before the court. In a sense, maybe as often happens when you do a case and things evolve and you think, gee, I wish I had brought that up. And although this one is in the record, and so it's not an attempt to expand the record, but it is a question based on the lineup of the documents. And the best I can do is to tell you it may make a difference.
All right. Then one other thing, kind of a housekeeping matter. With respect to the 8 sales, as I hear this, and as I've read your briefs, more than I care to have, but I have, there's no question that we have to reverse Judge Keene on those 8 sales, right?
Actually, it's Judge Tim.
Excuse me, Judge Tim.
That is correct.
Okay. And then the last thing I'm going to ask, well, maybe not the last, but that's on my mind right now, you asked how you want to know what we want. I want you to respond to Mr. Schaefer's argument about distinguishing Hufnagel on the distinction between real live third parties, that's Buck's kids that are out there selling that corn, and Burwald's, buying and selling cattle through a DBA.
I think this is actually an easier case because the Minnesota court held that live people here, in this case, were minor kids and employees, so both minors and adults, selling corn, representing to the buyer that they were the owners of the corn. The actual owners of the corn were Larry and Rhonda Buck. And so I think this case would be as if they had attempted to sell the corn through a newly created name. And that's important. It's a name. And so if they had attempted to sell the corn through L&R Farms, that would be this case. And I think there is no principal distinction that can be made between live parties and entities. In fact, I think even more so, the problem that this case poses, the problem of fraud, is easier if one would just sanction and say, well, it's okay if it's a name, because then there's more opportunity for a sale barn to interrogate live people rather than to interrogate a DBA. I think the court should not go down that road interpreting this statute. It's just simply is easier to create another name, a new name. And well, so the invitation to fraud is
if they can do that, if the owners against whom a financial statement was filed, if they could do that, they could just pick, Joe Blow Incorporated, John Doe Incorporated, Jane Doe Incorporated. They could pick any name at any time and sell the farm products or the goods under that name and defeat any properly secured financing interest, couldn't they?
Yes. I think the system is set up to actually balance interests of both secured lenders and buyers and commission merchants.
And they could never be the sellers, could they? In other words, Jane Doe Corporation, that's a fraud or a fiction, and they could never really be the sellers, and certainly they couldn't be the sellers who created the security interest, could they?
No, because they don't really have an existence. It's just a name.
Who owned these cattle in this case?
The Burwells. And certainly not C&M Dairy.
But you would concede, wouldn't you, that is for purposes of the FSA, ownership of the cattle is not relevant.
Yeah, so the one who created the security interest.
Right. So
that generates the duty to file the EFS.
And as far as giving notice, the notice exception, you don't have to be an owner necessarily to have to be required to give notice.
Yeah, actually, it's a two-part deal because there is a debtor who gives a security interest in the collateral, and there is a secured lender that essentially puts together the EFS, and so it's a two-party deal. But yes,
and someone like C&M Dairy or Jane Doe Corporation, they might deliver the livestock to the sale barn, but they're not the sellers, are they? They're not the owners of the property. They're just delivery men.
That's correct. In fact, that happens a lot. Whether employees are delivering the collateral or kids, the ability though to essentially circumvent the whole system that's set up by giving a fictitious name. There's an unlimited number of fictitious names that could be given. It seems to me, as between two relatively innocent parties, it makes sense to deal to at least require, in this type of situation with dishonest debtors, to require the sales barn to ask a simple question. C&M Dairy, what's that? And to give a tax ID number would
just
be
a minute,
first start.
Let me ask you this, though. When those cattle are delivered and the sale barn is told the seller is X, under the Food Security Act, the sale barn has no duty whatsoever of inquiry other than to go check the EFS. Correct? They have no duty to inquire who actually owns the cattle, what the legal relationship might be among the owners and the sellers or anything else. The sole duty of a buyer of farm product under the FSA, the sole duty of inquiry is to check the EFS. Is that correct?
If I might interrupt just to ask a question, how are they going to know who the sellers are if they don't ask?
Well, Justice Sitter, let me respond first, and then I'll respond to Justice Savers.
You have to assume they're told X is the seller.
Yes.
Now, what's their duty?
Well, they are required clearly to check the EFS. The question, which is not addressed by the Food Security Act, other than the G1 provision that you don't take free of a security interest created by somebody else, which I think solves this case. But as to the question, can we glean from the statute, did Congress think about the problem of dishonest debtors so that someone who says the cattle are owned by X is lying? It seems to me that while the statute doesn't address anything beyond the duty of searching the central filing system, it seems that after Huffnagel and hopefully after this case, that the practical response until Congress does otherwise is to at least satisfy the question, who's X?
Doesn't congressional history show, though, that buyers were specifically relieved of any obligation to check public records? Congress specifically said that or Congress didn't say it. It's either in the legislative history or in one of their findings. I can't remember where.
Yes, in fact, I think this was one of the reasons for the Food Security Act is we had lots of different solutions, some of which required a checking of other public records. There's no question that they wanted to streamline that. But what happens in the case where the person saying the owner is X is lying? If the court says that's good enough, that all they did there is essentially is the total limit of what they are required to do, the consequence of that is to undo the whole system. Because thank you, Your Honor. The system is set up basically on the assumption that everybody's going to be honest and it's just a matter of giving notice and the like. And this case, of course, is not that. But to hold that the that taking the dishonest debtor's claim at face value is going to open it up basically as a way when things are tight, let's just make up a name.
And actually, it destroys the Food Supply Act, doesn't it?
We believe it does. That's why this is not only a tough case. This is a case involving a very important question because the relative interests here. I mean, this is a very ordinary transaction, happens every day. And if a court were to say, if you just give them a name and that's all the sale bar needs to do, it would actually undermine the system that was set up to protect both the respective interests of secured lenders, debtors, and buyers.
But again, that's precisely what the Food Security Act says, isn't it?
Well,
no duty other than to check the central filing system.
Well, I think the Huffnagel court got it right. It essentially put the loss there on the buyers.
But they did that by the created by the seller limitation.
Yes.
Rather than the notice exception.
Yes. The things have moved in this case. We started at the beginning. All the sale bars fought very hard to have C&M Dairy as the seller. And actually, the first time I've heard it articulated as strongly today is, and I think it's in response to the Feinag versus Huffnagel case. I think they figured out they couldn't win that way. Now they're saying for the first time, really, that Burwalds are the seller. Actually, it says Burwalds DBA, but that's the movement they've had to make in light of the Huffnagel case.
Your time has expired.
Thank you.
Mr. Schaefer, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you. For the record, the security agreement, which is found in the record beginning at, this is in the South Dakota livestock case at 170, provides this agricultural security agreement dated June 27, 2002 is made and executed between Burwald Brothers, Calvin Burwald, Michael Burwald, Kimberly Burwald, and Sakota Dairy. The effective financing statements, which are found at 158 and 159, the UCC-1 lists Burwald Partnership, and the effective financing statement lists Burwald Partnership, Calvin Burwald, Michael Burwald, Kimberly Burwald, Sakota Dairy LLC. No mention of Burwald Brothers. With respect to the question that you asked Justice Zinner, I think it very well could make a difference as to whether or not the EFS was proper.
Well, don't tell me we got a remand on that issue.
No, I don't think you do. I think you can rule in favor of the sale barns based on the Food Security Act, and I don't agree with Mr. Van Patten's comment about the Tevadol case. Tevadol involved a priority dispute. It didn't involve whether or not somebody had complied with the technicalities of the Food Security Act for this type of a situation. And the court says you can go back and look at the UCC in a priority dispute, and they listed the hogs on the UCC in that case. Now, on this issue of can't we just walk in and use John Doe, Joe Blow, Inc., and defeat everything? Your question, Justice Sabers. And in this case, those aren't the facts in this case. The facts in this case are not that the Burwalds went in and listed C&M Dairy, Inc. out of the blue, unbeknownst to anybody.
The fact that that they did business as C&M Dairy was known to Fine Ag as of October of 2002.
So maybe you have a right to win under the state law cases, under maybe they consented to sale.
No.
Maybe there's collateral estoppel there. Maybe they didn't comply with some other provision.
We have a right to win under the Food Security Act because the regulations to the Food Security Act say that states can impose additional requirements for EFS filings. The state of South Dakota imposed an additional requirement. That is, you shall list the DBA as an additional debtor. Because Fine Ag didn't do that, and because they knew about it, they can't bring themselves within the exception under the notice exception. And that's our position. That's part of the Food Security Act because it's a state regulation promulgated consistent with the federal regulations.
And if you're right on that, it wouldn't destroy the Food Security Act like the fictitious seller would.
Well, right. And my point is this, Judge. If somebody, if the Bucks went in Fine Ag or in the Huffnagel case, I guess Fine Ag's in all these cases for some reason. I don't know why, but... if they went in the Huffnagel case, the Bucks, and says, we're selling this corn under the name of C&M Dairy, and nobody knew about C&M Dairy, it may very well be the same result. I don't know. But that's not the facts here. The facts here are that Fine Ag knew about C&M Dairy. And, Judge, you're exactly right. And I pulled up the legislative history when you were... questioning Professor Van Patten, says this act would preempt state laws that set as conditions for buyer protection of the type provided by state laws that set as conditions for buyer protection bill requirements that the buyer check public records, obtain no lien certificates from the farm product seller, or otherwise seek out the lender and account to that lender for the sale proceeds. The legislative history behind the Food Security Act is very clear that it was intended to not have purchasers or commission merchants go out and check all of those things. We have to check the central filing in South Dakota, which was done. And if Fine Ag would have done its job, we wouldn't be here because they would have listed C&M Dairy and they would have been listed on the checks along with Fine Ag. So I think it's as simple as that. Does the court have any other questions?
It's not. Thank you.
Thank you.